Here we are again, here we are again, here we are again,
here we are again,
here we are again,
here we are again.
I think it's a historic vote where we can all say we're equal.
I often find myself conflicted whether or not I should try to pass as straight. I talk with less emotion, at a lower pitch, and with a slightly different vocabulary. When I think about it, I'm reminded that this is literally what homophobia is.
For his distinguished contributions to music, Tippett was knighted in 1966 by Queen Elizabeth II.
When the calendar turned in 1991, 100,000 Americans were dead from AIDS, twice as many as had perished in Vietnam.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Chechnya's gay purge engulfs lesbians and trans people. A young man considers the queer in his ear, and how to survive a plague in many not-so-easy lessons. Those stories and a lot more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 15th, 2017. The horrors get more horrifying by the day in Chechnya, where an effort in the mostly Muslim region of Russia to exterminate LGBTQ people seemingly continues unabated. Hundreds of men suspected of being gay or bisexual have been arrested at work, in their homes, or on the streets since the purge began in April. They're taken to secret gay concentration camps and tortured until authorities are satisfied that they provided the names of all of their friends and acquaintances who could also be gay or bisexual. Six deaths were confirmed by the end of June, either during torture or in so-called honor killings at the hands of shamed fundamentalist Muslim family members. The Russian LGBT network has been helping gay and bisexual men escape the semi-autonomous Russian region since the pogrom began. A spokesperson said this week that lesbians and transgender people, or anyone perceived to be sexually or gender variant, could be targeted in Chechnya too. He said that lesbians are frequent victims of domestic violence as well as honor killings. The buck stops in any part of the Russian Federation with President Vladimir Putin. He assured both German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron in separate talks that he'd launch an investigation into the allegations of a gay purge in Chechnya. The Russian LGBT network lamented late last month, however, that Putin's minions have made sure that any such investigation goes nowhere.
In his most chilling comments today, Chechen President Ramzan Kadyrov dismissed questions this week about the gay genocide from a reporter for HBO's Real Sports in a segment about a wrestling league in Chechnya. Stroking his beard and smirking, he told reporter David Scott through an interpreter that, "We don't have those kinds of people here. To purify our blood, if there are any here, take them to Canada," he said. When pushed by Scott about the numerous reports and testimonies by tortured gay survivors, Kadyrov said, "They are devils. They are for sale. They are not people." Clearly unhappy with the line of questioning, he said, "God damn them for what they are accusing us of. They will have to answer to the Almighty for this." A number of officials from the European Union, the UK, and most of the Western world have publicly urged Russian President Vladimir Putin to put a stop to the purge. US President Donald Trump has been noticeably silent.
In better news for LGBTQ people and their allies, Malta's parliament voted almost unanimously on July 12th to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Only one lawmaker voted no among the 67 MPs. Maltese Prime Minister Joseph Muscat fulfilled one of his re-election campaign promises by ushering the marriage equality bill through Parliament.
I think it's a historic vote. It shows that our democracy and our society is maturing, has reached an unprecedented level of maturity, and it's a society where we can all say we're equal.
The tiny, traditionally conservative Roman Catholic island nation has become one of the most progressive in Europe under Muscat's leadership. Malta, home to about 430,000 people, only legally recognized same-gender couples with civil unions in 2014. This year, Malta became the first in Europe to outlaw so-called gay cure therapy. Lawmakers have also enacted pioneering reforms for transgender and intersex people. Government officials in the southern European country predict that same-gender couples could be walking down the aisle in as little as 3 months after several agencies revised documents and forms to conform to the new law's gender-neutral language. German lawmakers have also approved marriage equality legislation, and officials there are also in the process of formalizing procedures and documents. It's now a race to see which country will be the 23rd on the planet and which will be the 24th to host its first wedding of a lesbian or gay couple.
A gay retiree has won a landmark case in Britain's highest court to get equal pension benefits for his husband. The company that now 66-year-old John Walker worked for told him it would not pay out spousal pension benefits to his husband upon his death because his pension plan predated 2005 when Britain first legally recognized same-gender couples. All five judges at the Supreme Court, the nation's highest, overturned a 2015 Court of Appeal ruling against Walker. They concluded that Walker's company was using a legal loophole to deny the marital equality required, somewhat ironically, by the laws of the European Union, which Britain is preparing to leave. The British government has assured concerned activists that there will be no rollback of LGBTQ rights in a post-Brexit Britain. Walker's husband will now be entitled to his annual spousal pension benefits of close to £45,000, about $58,000. Until the High Court's July 12th ruling, it would have only been about £1,000 a year.
The Church of England also advanced equality this week. A motion approved at the denomination's synod in early July called for the government to outlaw the use of so-called gay conversion therapy that claims to make gay people straight. The Archbishop of York, the Most Reverend John Sintamu, is one of the Anglican Church's most senior officials. The world needs to hear us say that LGBT orientation and identity is not a crime, he told the BBC, adding that it's not a sickness, and LGBT orientation and identity is not a sin. The Church of England's governing body also voted to study the creation of special liturgies for transgender people to help them mark their transition. Chris Newland, the vicar of Lancaster Priory Church, said that, I hope that we can make a powerful statement that we believe trans people are cherished and loved by God who created them. But ministers are not allowed to celebrate the weddings of same-gender couples in their churches. The Church of England's ties to the global Anglican Communion make that problematic. Most of the Communion's increasingly dominant congregations in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, known as the Global South, are biblical conservatives that strongly oppose any rights for LGBTQ people, especially marriage equality.
A gay man in China has become the first in his country to win a lawsuit against the practitioners of so-called gay cure therapy. The man, identified only as Yu, endured medications and injections intended to change his sexual orientation for almost 3 weeks in a psychiatric hospital in central China's Henan province. The court ordered the hospital to publish an apology to the man in local newspapers and awarded Yu the equivalent of a few hundred U.S. dollars in compensation. While the decision is considered to be significant, its scope is also narrow. Yu's rights were violated, the court ruled, because his wife and her family had him admitted to the hospital against his will after he had filed for divorce, even though he was not a threat to himself or others.
Elsewhere, the governor of Indonesia's Aceh province vowed this week to put an end to public floggings. Aceh is a semi-autonomous province and governs under Sharia, or Islamic law, while the rest of Indonesia is legally secular. Governor Irawandi Yusuf, however, doesn't want to end the floggings. He now just wants to do them behind closed doors. Indonesian President Joko Widodo expressed concerns in recent meetings with Yusuf about the negative international publicity over the viral video canings in May of a young gay couple with 300 cheering onlookers in Aceh's public square. Widodo is said to be worried about its impact on foreign investments in Indonesia. Pink News reported that a recent study showed anti-LGBTQ bias is costing the world's most populous Muslim nation as much as $12 billion U.S. dollars every year. Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and other global advocacy groups have called on the Aceh government to end corporal punishment altogether. But officials there launched a special task force earlier this year to ferret out and punish sexual and gender-variant minorities in the province.
About 2,000 police officers prevented confrontations between a few hundred chanting fundamentalist Christian protesters and an estimated 10,000 LGBTQ people and their friends parading with pride under rainy skies in Seoul, South Korea on July 15th. Only 50 people participated in Seoul's first Pride March in 2000.
Several hundred people marched through the streets of Tallinn on July 8th in the first peaceful pride march in the Estonian capital in 10 years. The annual tradition ended in chaos in 2007 when ultranationalists and religious fundamentalists assaulted several pride marchers. Organizers said that 1,800 people took part in this year's resurrection. A handful of protesters along the parade route were kept at bay by security forces.
And finally, tens of thousands of revelers celebrated Pride at London's annual parade, also on July 8th. The British Parliament's Palace of Westminster was illuminated in rainbow colors at sunset to commemorate this year's 50th anniversary of passage of the Sexual Offences Act that decriminalized private consensual adult gay sex in the UK on July 27, 1967. Here in London, Mayor Sadiq Khan wrote on Twitter ahead of the march, "You are free to be who you want to be and love who you want to love."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 15th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Hello, this is the actor Michael Emerson, Ben on Lost. It's not easy being one of the others, so if time travel or moving the island isn't an option and you're feeling sort of lost, try listening to Greg and Lucia on This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
Coming up later in the program, a thoughtful consideration of the voices we love to hate and hate to love.
I probably do have gay voice. But I'm not ashamed of it. It's just my natural voice, and something I unfortunately have begun to think critically of.
And a recent book that recalls the voices lost during the AIDS years.
In those days, the women's community, what we then call the lesbian and feminist community, was mostly separate from the gay male community. Understandably, gay men and lesbians had our differences.
But first, a historic gay voice with a classical accent.
British composer Sir Michael Tippett. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Michael Tippett composed all genres of classical music, including symphonies, string quartets, piano sonatas, and choral works. Ahead of his time, he wrote operas with homoerotic themes. Born in London in 1905, Tippett was initially seduced by the musical works of Beethoven. He graduated from the Royal College of Music and was music director at Morley College in London from 1940 to 1951. During World War II, he was a conscientious objector, which landed him in prison for 3 months. To brighten his time there, he organized and conducted the prison orchestra. For his distinguished contributions to music, Tippett was knighted in 1966 by Queen Elizabeth II. Upon his death in 1998, he was survived by Bill Bowen, his partner of 30 years. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John DeBoer.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio, read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com, and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
Do I sound black to you? Am I bi-vocal? Keep guessing. While a young queer radio producer from Outcasting wonders whether he has gay voice.
This is Outcasting Overtime. a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting is heard online at outcastingmedia.org, on iTunes, and on more than 45 public radio stations affiliated with the Pacifica Radio Network. Hi, I'm Lauren, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Alex shares his experience of the balance between trying to sound heterosexual and trying to sound gay, and the internalized homophobia that comes with this.
I've been working on Outcasting for almost a year now. Of course, it's been thrilling to hear my voice on a polished radio production. But in listening to recordings of myself, I've been forced to confront my voice for the first time, not only my clarity and emphasis, but the actual quality and sound of my voice. To put it bluntly, I ask myself, do I have gay voice? Gay voice is the stereotyped, high-pitched, and emotive voice that television shows give to their gay male characters to separate them from their straight counterparts. It is an extension of the belief that gay men are more feminine than straight men. Often, gay characters are used as comic relief or as a punchline for a cheap laugh. When a character has a clearly identifiable gay voice, it helps the audience understand, but it does this at the expense of being offensive and inaccurate. This small, seemingly insignificant characteristic is a way to ostracize and exclude gay people on a superficial level. Outcasting is an LGBTQ radio program, so many of us are gay. I am too. To some extent, I do have a fear of having a gay voice. It doesn't come from a fear of being outed. I'm out to all my close friends and my family, the people I care about. So, I think that for me, the fear comes from somewhere else. I often find myself conflicted whether or not I should try to pass as straight. It's pretty simple to change your voice. When I try to sound straight, I talk with less emotion, at a lower pitch, and with a slightly different vocabulary. I'm not really sure if this works. When I think about it, I'm reminded that this is literally what homophobia is, a fear of being gay, being perceived as gay. Doing this gives me some security and control, but it doesn't sound like me. It emotionally and spiritually betrays my sense of self. On the other side of the spectrum of gay voiceness, there's the push to sound more gay. When I turn up my colloquialisms and my exclamations, my friends seem to react well. Being a quote-unquote stereotype makes me more recognizable and strangely more relatable. I like when people laugh when I throw down the shade or when I become what is so familiar in media. I think it fulfills my subconscious need for attention, as well as my fear of being forgotten. But I'm not completely sure if people are laughing at me or with me. And again, it just isn't me. So, there's a thin line between the two, both fueled by my social desire to fit in. And to be fair, I probably do have gay voice. But I'm not ashamed of it. It's just my natural voice, and something I unfortunately have begun to think critically of. A more introspective way of considering, do I have gay voice, would be, is my voice an accurate representation of my character? And the answer is clearer to me now. I should try to sound like me, not someone else, not more gay or less gay. I should focus less on my voice and more on what I'm actually saying, because my intention and my words say far more than how I say it.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting is heard online at outcastingmedia.org, on iTunes, and on more than 45 public radio stations around the country. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to the show. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Well, folks, we'll be back in a minute with more excitement right after this word.
Beer. Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Jerry Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Bean.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valanche.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens. And you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
And that's the truth.
A recent book brings an era marked by death back to life for This Way Out queer life and lit commentator Janet Mason, with accompanying music by John Buchino.
There are thousands dying tonight. Some say they chose their own scripts. Blame them, shame them, drugs denied. The sickness, the hate, and the hope side by side by side.
Now and then comes that rare book that brings your life rushing back to you. How to Survive a Plague, the Inside Story of How Citizens and Science Tamed AIDS by David France, Knopf, 2016, is one such book. The book chronicles the AIDS epidemic from the early 1980s, when the mysterious gay cancer started appearing, to 1995, when hard-won advancements in research and pharmaceuticals made AIDS a virus that people lived with rather than a disease that people died from. It was an epidemic of massive proportions. As France writes, when the calendar turned to 1991, 100,000 Americans were dead from AIDS, twice as many as had perished in Vietnam. The book chronicles the scientific developments, the entwined politics, and medical breakthroughs in the AIDS epidemic. AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, is a chronic infectious condition that is caused by the underlying human immunodeficiency virus known as HIV. I came out in 1981, and while the devastation France writes about was not my world, it was very close to my experience. In those days, the women's community, what we then call the lesbian and feminist community, was mostly separate from the gay male community. Understandably, gay men and lesbians had our differences. But there was infighting in every group. Rebellion was in the air, and sometimes we took out our hostilities on each other. Still, gay men and lesbians were also allies and friends, something that is reflected in France's writing. I'll always remember the time my partner and I took a bus to Washington, D.C. with the guys from ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, an international activist group that is still in existence, from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. to protest for reproductive rights. The women then went to protest with ACT UP and AIDS-related protests. At that time, many gay men and lesbians were in the closet because we were vilified by society and in danger of losing our employment, family, housings, and ultimately our lives. AIDS activism necessitated coming out of the closet. Hate crimes against us skyrocketed. How to Survive a Plague is told in stories, including the author's own story. This is apt because the gay rights movement was full of stories, and because of the epidemic, most of those stories were cut short. Almost every June, my partner and I would be part of the New York Pride Parade, and every year we would pause for an official moment to honor our dead. The silence was cavernous. This silence extended to entire communities. A gay male friend, amazed when his test came back negative, told me that most of his address book was crossed out. He would walk around Center City, Philadelphia, surrounded by the haunting places where his friends used to live. We were all so young then. When I turned the last page of How to Survive Plague, I concluded that this is a very well-done book about a history that is important in its own right. The plague years also represent an important part of the American experience. An understanding of this history is imperative to the future of the LGBT movement. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
There's a world in a bubble tonight. Some say we sit by as it rips. Silence, sanctions, action guides. The poison, the greed, and the love side by side by side. But the love survives until the balance dips. We wait in shadow. We live what we know. With a prayer on our lips until the balance dips. The pain we pull through. The good we can do is a prayer on our lips until the balance dips. We wait in shadow. We live what we know. With a prayer on our lips until the balance dips. The pain we pull through. The good we can do is a prayer on our lips until the balance dips.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, Wenzel Jones and Sarah Sweeney, produced by Steve Pride, John DeBoer, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Janet Mason contributed program material, with special thanks to Outcasting's Lauren and Alex and executive producer Mark Sofis. Bobby Day and John Buchino performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and our listener donors for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 3BBB Ballarat, Victoria, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, KMUN Astoria, Oregon, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.